Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned, and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Today, I am interviewing Maria Wilkes. She is an old friend and teacher, but she has had a very interesting life. Despite being in education, she also entered Miss Universe UK, where she came third. Now, Miss Universe is not something you associate with your average teacher, and believe me, she certainly caused a storm in the process. Maria now runs a tutoring business and coaches parents in ways to give their children a growth mindset. Thus, she is a rather perfect guest for the show. It's a really great episode, and we learn about all things mindsets and education, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. So, welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast.
Thanks, Sam.
I'm delighted to have you here. You've been a long-time friend, three or four years.
4 years now, 4 years. Yeah.
And yeah, you've done quite a few different things. And so you've been a bit of an influencer, you've been a teacher, you've done a master's, you've entered the Miss Universe
competition. Yeah, that seems like a lifetime
and
ago.
And now you coach parents on how to coach the growth mindset in their children, which
I'm
obviously very into. Do you think you ever coach parents on growth mindset at the same time just for themselves?
It is something that I would do. I think that for parents at the moment, the ones that I have been in touch with, you know, they want to really focus on the kid first of all, but I think through that they are learning so much about themselves. One of the first things that I discuss is how has their parenting been affected by their own parents growing up? And so that's a question that most of them have never even asked themselves before. And so that's always interesting to start off and really get them think about, oh, actually, you know, when I was a kid, my parents brought me up this way and my parents were very strict. And so now this is the way that I parent. And so that's always the way that I start.
That's interesting. As we're looking at how to start this, how did your parents bring you up then, Maria?
Well, with my parents, I have discovered now, having done a lot of research and just thinking back, that they were fairly strict with me. It was something that I never questioned. We had rules in the house. We had a set bedtime. I was encouraged to play the piano and go swimming. And do I remember making those choices? No, but I did enjoy having that routine. But with my mum, so my mum actually had me very, very young. She was 23 when she had me. And she was parented in a very non-strict way. So my grandma was not strict with her at all and let her have so much freedom. My mum broke a lot of rules. She didn't really have a lot of guidance. And so with me, she was very strict and there were lots of rules enforced. And so she kind of went the opposite way of how my grandma was with her. And so my parents were fairly strict with me. I would say that I had some choices, but not many. And I think the more obstacles there are with rules and the less freedom that you have to really know who you are. And so that's something that I've had to discover in my 20s and almost late 20s. You know, who actually am I? Why is it that in my 20s, I still didn't know who I was? And so
I feel like there's so many people these days who are in their 20s who don't know who they are exactly or
so
what
many.
They're doing. But I'm not sure if that's just parenting or as well as like just the way culture is. And you go through education, you know, you have to pick something and you don't even know why you're picking it. You haven't had time to work out what you want.
I think it's definitely both. I think the way that you are brought up, there's definitely a nature argument there, but the way that you are brought up and do your parents want you to satisfy their needs that they had growing up, and is that why they're insisting that you do this sport or that you go to this university? And the education system as well, obviously I was in for 6 years as a secondary school teacher, there was very little room for creativity. And yes, the girls had lessons, you know, they had their art lessons, PE lessons, music lessons, but it was very much follow the curriculum, do the exams every 6 weeks, there were tests. And in this system where they had very little freedom to even really do the subjects that they wanted to do and kind of just becoming almost robots in a way, you know, just the school wanting to just get the result.
Yeah.
And so when you leave that system or when you leave your house, you know, your household, when you grow up and you move out, you're not in school anymore. And when you've left university, there are a lot of 20-year-olds feeling very, very lost without that structure and without anyone telling them what to do anymore. So I definitely went through all of that, wanting to do a gap year and being told that I couldn't do a gap year, I should go straight to uni. And so luckily I found teaching, which I still do. I'm still a tutor in the evenings and on weekends. I still do my online lessons. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Life, you know, is what we're really doing. Yeah, the whole education system is sort of really silly the way it focuses so much on like specific results without thinking more of like the broader, what is the point of like, you know, you want to make someone as successful and happy as they can be in their life. But you sort of have this weird sort of system with these rules that actually aren't necessarily guiding us in that way to get the result that you really want.
Absolutely, yeah. So with the education system, the way it is at the moment, the focus being made, you know, the majority of teachers, you know, they want to get the grades and the school want to get the result. Kids are just going through the subjects that they don't really want to do. They don't really know why they're there and they don't really know who they are and why they're doing what they're doing. So it's really interesting. And I don't know what it's going to take to change that. I know that in some countries, especially
in
Finland, a lot of Scandinavian countries actually don't test children until they're a lot older and there's less pressure. The kids are there to learn and they love learning. So there is a love of learning. And that obviously, most of the time, it means that they become lifelong learners as well, because they've learned from a young age to love learning. And so the learning never stops.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, back, I think 2 years ago, I did a course online about how to learn. And you're like, why the hell was I not taught this as a child? Like, surely this is the most important thing to be doing.
Yeah, how to learn and how to be creative and how to have a voice as well, which I think a lot of children don't have. They don't have at all at school or at home.
Or it's sort of taken out of them.
Yeah.
So I mean, like the whole, like Ken Robinson talks about how children are naturally creative and not so afraid to make mistakes. And we kind of cheat that into them.
Yeah, parents and teachers actually say, well, no, if you make a mistake, you know, this is wrong. So yeah, so children are growing up without taking challenges and risks. And where do we get the most results from when we take challenges and when we take risks? The bigger the risk, the bigger
it's a hard one, because you want to teach people to understand how to like make rules up for themselves and to take things on, but you don't want to like just break rules as a force of principle and to just do the stupid thing because of you teaching that like you can do stupid things and it's good.
Oh yeah.
I think
there definitely has to be some sort of balance, you know, and teaching and showing children right and wrong. But also it doesn't matter if you make a mistake and get it wrong, you know, you fix it the next time. And who's to say that mistake isn't going to, one, make you a stronger person and make you more resilient, which is something that I'm really big on, resilience. And actually, I listened to one of your episodes, Sam, which you talked about fear and that feeling that you have of, you know, fear. What meaning do you attach to that fear? Well, the sensation you get doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. You know, if you feel the fear, do it anyway.
Yeah, definitely. If you start getting like excited and attracted to fear.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because the feeling that you get when you're scared and when you're excited is the same, but just attach a meaning to the fear.
Like, you think of like addiction models of when you get like the instant reward from going onto your phone or something, it starts to addict you to it. But if you sort of start to sort of notice that confronting your fear gets you a good result, you start to get like more addicted to being like, oh, something I'm scared of, that's a useful thing. You start following your fears and being like, oh, if I confront my fears, like there's always good things on the other side.
Exactly.
Instead of always sort of being confined by your fears.
Completely confined to your own reality that you've experienced so far.
Yeah, how do you get people to like be, oh my God. Clearly, I'm not good with words. So when you want people to make mistakes, then how do you say that in the right way?
So with the kids, there is a lot of resistance. So I tend to dive into personal experiences that I've had, or I try and get the children in particular to think of times when they have been afraid and what has been the outcome of that situation. It's very difficult with teenagers, the way that they're being brought up today. You know, they don't want to be judged and they don't want to make a mistake because they feel like they're constantly being watched, right?
Yeah.
And so one thing that I always try to explain to them, and actually something that helped me as well when I was doing a lot of social media and being an influencer, was, you know, we're all living our own realities, we're all in our own little universe, and actually you thinking about someone judging you, you know, they're thinking about who's judging them more than they're thinking about you, right? So if you think about how often you spend thinking of other people, it might be a fleeting thought, but actually you're more worried about yourself and what people think of you. And like, if you apply that to everyone else, actually it makes sense. So why worry about what someone's thinking of you when they're not really thinking about you?
Definitely. Or like, if you don't look that great in a group photo, no one's looking at you because they're looking at themselves and wondering how good they look.
Exactly. And that applies to everyday life. I truly believe that. And that's something that has definitely resonated with the kids, because they realize, oh, actually, you know, oh, so-and-so did something embarrassing at school day, but I haven't thought about it.
You didn't care.
I'm more worried about what people think of me. So that's actually helped them, I think, break out of their comfort zones in a way. So yeah, something to think about, and just being aware to step outside of their own almost body and have a kind of almost out-of-body experience, you know, really look at themselves in a critical way. And are the decisions that they're making every day going to lead them to where they want to be in the future? And so many children live in the now and in the present. They don't really think about tomorrow. And so all these little decisions that they're making every day, it's actually not really getting them to where they want to be because they're so held back by their own beliefs and their own realities and their own world that they've constructed. And parents play a massive role in that as well, you know, with the things that they say to their children and also the way that they behave themselves. You know, if you're telling your child, take risks, and you know, start practicing a new sport, you're gonna be so much fitter and happier, but they're not doing anything.
Get off your phone whilst you're on your phone.
Exactly. So parents play a huge role in this, and they're the most influential people in a child's life.
Yeah, it's a hard one. What do you think is the reason that people are so caught up in the moment? Because I mean, you try to get people to be more present, but I feel like you're alluding to a different type of being in the present, as in being lost in the present, as opposed to being like, I am here being present.
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
Well, you know, there's addiction, isn't there? Mm. To always, one, being on your phone, but why are you on your phone? Because you're looking at what other people are doing. You know, you're constantly comparing yourself to what so-and-so is doing on social media. And so we are addicted, a lot of us, well, the kids especially, to portraying an image of themselves online that isn't their reality because they want to be seen a certain way. And so they are not living for themselves, they're living for the version that they want others to see of them. And so it's just a complete addiction for that feeling of validation, I think, and finding happiness and fulfillment from other external sources rather than from within. And so that's something that I'm trying to tap into now with my courses for parents. You know, how do you give your child enough self-worth and confidence that they don't have to rely on their phones or their social media or even their friends for validation because they know that they have it themselves.
Yeah, big topics.
And it's such a fast-paced world now. We all, you know, instant gratification. You want to watch a film, go on Netflix. You want to order food, just order food and it'll be in your door in 20 minutes. You know, there's no, kids aren't really being taught patience.
Yeah, definitely. Or like, you know, you think like you used to listen to like whole vinyl records or something, and now it's just like you listen to like 30 seconds of an intro of a song and you're already bored.
And you're already bored. Next thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about it, it's kind of like that with sort of Tinder and stuff as well.
Yeah.
It used to be like a longer thing to have a relationship or something.
But you used to have to meet someone.
So many people on demand in a queue that you can talk to that you don't ever have the time, you don't bother to invest yourself.
And this is exactly what worries me, you know, the fact that teenagers and kids are growing up without knowing how to form meaningful relationships that do take time, that require patience and that they don't have. Yeah. And so they don't even need to learn how to be social beings and how to approach someone that they like and ask them on a date and, you know, do the whole, okay, they can just swipe right and yes, no, next. And so we're just living in this world that we need to actually just look at and just be aware of, I think, is the first step is just being aware and being conscious. I don't have the answers. I don't know how, you know, I don't think anyone does, but being aware is definitely the first step to realizing, you know, our behavior patterns.
Yeah, I think understanding your behavior patterns and then like coaching people that you're doing and sort of getting people to embrace their fears, because your phone is basically like your defense from your fears. So if you're ever in like a social, like awkward situation, you know, you just go on your phone and you have to like, engage in it and things.
You
can't like approach women, then you use your phone.
It's a comforting thing.
Yeah, if you're not sure what's going on with something that you wanted to know about, you just go onto Google.
Like, quickly find
out.
You
just always have like, it just always asks your answers. Like if you don't know where to go, you just look on Google. You don't actually talk to someone about it.
Yeah.
It's just there to like, it's like your comfort device the whole time, which is why people get so scared if like they run out of battery and they can't even, like people like will leave the home and like actually go back to go and get their phone kind of thing. Whereas if you left like something else, you just wouldn't bother.
You wouldn't bother, you'd be fine without it. Yeah,
but it's just like your massive support system. Basically, which you need to learn how to like actually be yourself more.
Mm-hmm. And this is coming from us who were in our late 20s. We grew up with phones, but I didn't have a smartphone until I was, can't remember, 17, 18 maybe? Yeah. Maybe I was a bit older, but you know.
It's, I think iPhone came out when we were 16.
Okay, so
Or 16, 17, depending on. You're younger than me?
I'm 29. I'm older. Too. Oh.
But I did have a gap.
Oh, okay.
Not that it makes a difference.
Well, I just remember growing up with a phone.
My friend getting an iPhone.
It's
pretty funny. But yeah, my gap year, like I never had a smart device.
No.
So, like I drove around America and everything was just like,
we've known life without it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but kids now, they haven't. They have no idea. They're even more reliant than we are.
yeah, definitely. It's pretty worrying, really, because we became reliant super instantly.
Yeah, exactly. And with the generation now, I think with like the last
but we kind of at least we can realize what it used to be like. Oh shit, there was something good without this. Whereas if you just don't know what it's like without this, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
lots of food for thought and issues to confront. I guess getting people to be more comfortable with their fears and learn to like them is one really useful step. But
I think so much of what I try to tell the parents and the kids is, what is the meaning that they're attaching to their feelings? What's the meaning that they're attaching to how they approach certain subjects or certain difficulties and struggles? And just changing and just shifting the meaning that you apply to something can make such a difference, especially for children. You know, they think that the teacher's picking on them, or they think that something is wildly unfair. But actually, when they strip that back and think, okay, well, why have I attached this meaning to it when this may not necessarily be the case? And then they realize, oh, okay, well, no, the teacher wasn't being a certain way, or it's not personal to me. Maybe the teacher was having a bad day that day. It's not personal. That's just one example. Yeah, yeah. And it does make such a big difference when they look outside of their emotions. And one of the things that I learned when I did Tony Robbins in December, I Date with Destiny, one of the activities or the exercises that we did was actually to think of a fire in front of us. Just think of a fire. You're standing in front of a fire, and just take your emotions and all your fears, any emotion that you have, and throw it into the fire. Do you cease to be yourself? No. So you're not your emotions. But a lot of us are driven by our emotions. But if you just throw all of those in the fire, you're still yourself. You're still Sam. I'm still me. And so we can choose to not let our emotions drive our actions. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So humans are essentially emotional creatures. If you think about all your decisions, you're not as analytical as you think you are. When you buy stuff, it's like, do I want this or do I not want it? And like, is it because I feel like it's going to make me happy having it?
Yeah.
Like I'm not being, like I see it and I get like the instant thing. Like, and maybe I'll think about the price like a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm not half as analytical as I think I am. It's definitely like a very like, oh, Sam needs to solve a problem right now. Or like half of like my eating, if I'm like at home, I just snack all the time. But that's mainly because I'm just like a bit scared about doing my next work and like I'm procrastinating. It's not because of I actually need sustenance right now because I'm going to die or something. It's
and so again, it's just stopping, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's
just to reflect. And so many of us don't stop. You know, we wake up each day, we just go through the day. We don't ever stop to think or ask questions. You know, when you're small, when you're a child, you ask so many questions about the world. And then one day it just stops. We stop asking questions and then we live the same day every day.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to that instant gratification or, you know, procrastinating on something that you know needs to be done. So,
things. So yeah, this sounds like you're mainly coaching mindfulness and just learning to understand your emotions is a huge part of it. Do you teach any kind of meditation or anything like that? Or
no, I don't. In fact, it's something that I've started to try myself, just 5-10 minutes a day, especially in the mornings, you know, before I start my day.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I haven't actually tried it with the children. I think it could be a good idea. You meditate quite often, don't you? Every day?
Generally. But yeah, doing like the big 10-day Vipassana thing is definitely sort of just...
Yes.
Changes you, like a forcing function inside, really. It's just make you more mindful and aware of like emotions and why you're being driven around doing different things. And just gives you like the sort of like, in the same way that like you kind of stop and recognize the fear and then think about what you want to do, like with anything else, like if you just feel like your body's starting to do something, you recognize that before you then do it.
Yeah,
so as in, because you kind of, you sit in a very painful way and you learn that you don't have to instantly get away from this pain, and you can kind of just sit there and be with it and it'll end anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like run away from it. It's okay. And you can kind of just deal with things, but it gets you very in touch with your body and not instantly doing what your body's telling you. But if something annoying happens, like your body instantly gets angry and you feel it, but like you then just go and do it. But you notice that your body's sort of having this feeling and you go, oh, I've got this weird change of feelings. What should I think about these feelings before I then like do something?
Yeah.
Just so you kind of know that you don't have to instantly do stuff because your body's telling you to do it.
So true. Or even worse, you run away from it and you don't do anything at all. And then
exactly
the years go by and you've let fear control you.
Yeah, sure. So it's really, really good, but I don't know how to do that with kids exactly.
Yes, it is something I'm still working out. But again, you know, the best way to get through to the kids is through the parents. If the parents are conscious themselves and they're aware of how they're parenting the kids, then that's a massive step.
Yeah, and just being more mindful and asking those kind of questions definitely cultivates it a lot. Because I find I don't always need to meditate that much if I am just spending some time with myself and just walking and like actually thinking. Or like I listen to lots of podcasts and stuff, but I stop myself after listening to one and like I'll actually speak out loud what I thought about it and like what I learned and what I might need to do. And actually like,
and speaking out loud,
if you just think it a little bit, like your brain just goes off in a million directions. But if you try and imagine like, if I pretend that you asked me like what I learned from that podcast, I'll try and tell you. But I'd I'd have to talk solidly for 2 minutes. If I just think it for a bit, like, I'll just go off and do different things.
Yeah.
But when you talk, you follow a train of thought. So it's really good to literally talk to yourself,
that's
which
a good
sounds
way.
Like you're nuts, but it's awesome.
No, that's a
and
really
And you can do it on the tube
idea.
Because no one, yeah. no one has a clue because you're wearing headphones and they think that you're talking to someone, that you're actually talking to yourself.
Yeah.
It's fine. You just walk around. Like, no
We're
one
in London. Yeah, you could get away with anything, couldn't
yeah.
you? Yeah. Oh, I might borrow that and try it with the kids and see what happens. You know, what did you learn from this lesson? Go on.
yeah, definitely. Again, some feedback. And
yeah,
to
definitely.
Things big. Okay, cool. So other things you've done, your own sort of scary things. So, I mean, as a teacher, yes. you also were like an influencer on Instagram, which is like a bit of a dual opposing kind of thing.
Yes.
Interesting sets of rules, possibility. Like,
yeah, but why yeah. not, you know? And it's something that I had always wanted to try, you know, and dabble in the world of YouTube, in the world of influencer marketing and blogging. And being a teacher, you are very restricted with what you can and cannot do. You know, you have to live a very private life and students shouldn't know what you're doing outside of school hours. And so I always have this kind of conflicting, I guess, or trivial, I don't know what to call it really, but I felt very conflicted in myself because I loved what I did as a teacher, but I also had my own life outside of teaching because although I'm a teacher, it's not my whole life. And I love fashion, makeup. I love all that side of, you know, the beauty industry as well. And so I decided to do the scary thing and perhaps go outside of my comfort zone whilst being a teacher and start my own blog, which I did. And I didn't tell anyone about it. And then, you know, if no one knows about your blog, obviously no one's going to read it and no one knows about it. What's the point? So eventually the students started to find out and to my surprise, they loved it. The fact that they could see that I wasn't just a teacher and that I had my other passions outside of school made them relate to me more. It made them look up to me more. And I feel like they, you know, it was an all-girls school and they seemed to connect with me more in the classroom because they realized, wow, she's actually her own person. You know, I think, you know, when we were at school, we used to just think, oh, this is the teacher. It's just the teacher.
Yeah,
they have no other life. And so I do think I gained more respect from them just by being myself.
Yeah.
And so I started my YouTube channel and I was doing both the YouTube and the blogging alongside with the teaching. And it was a great balance, very unorthodox, not the norm at all, but it was great. And again, it was just me embracing the fear. I just let that fear of what other people would think of me, how the parents would judge me, how the kids would judge me, you know, how my colleagues would judge me, stop me from doing something that I felt really passionate about. And in the end, I actually ended up leaving my teaching job at the school to pursue blogging and to do, you know, my YouTube channel and to do that and Miss Universe to have a greater impact.
Yeah.
I did feel restricted in the classroom. I love what I was doing at that moment, but I did feel like I kind of grew out of that and I needed to just be my true self and not just be in a classroom as a teacher. And so, you know, I'm still teaching now. I just have more of a balance of what I'm doing day to day. So I entered, Miss Universe Great Britain 2017. And again, it feels like a lifetime ago since that happened. And the reason that I did that, and it was a bit of a controversial decision, and it was to have a platform to be able to inspire young women or young girls to have a voice and to not let anyone else dictate what path you should go down as a teacher. Entering a beauty pageant, a lot of questions were asked, but why? Why, right? And actually so many parents, and I can't speak for all of them, but so many parents really supported that decision because they could see that the girls, the way that they viewed me and the way that I became a role model for them was because they realized, wow, you know, she could do both. She doesn't have to just follow one path. And, you know, she can be multifaceted and have different passions, not just teaching French and Spanish. And again, I can't speak for all parents, but many of them did reach out and did say, wow, my daughter's so inspired by you. And so the winner actually went on to have a really big platform where the winner actually, I believe she does humanitarian law or she studied humanitarian law. And so she had a platform where she could, you know, she was doing interviews, she was running fundraisers, and it just gives you a platform to be able to spread a message. You know, beauty pageants have a long history and probably not the best reputation, but again, you know, it was about just having a platform and I just thought, why not? I'll just go for it. And it was the last year that I, you know, I had a chance to do it. You have to be under a certain age.
Ah,
I was that age
that.
And I thought, if I don't do it this year, I'm never going to do it. And that's just going to be a regret. So I did.
Cool. Yeah, no regrets. Nice.
No regrets.
Yeah, that's an ordeal. So, so what do you think you learned from doing Miss Universe?
Gosh. So the first thing was that I could, or that I did not let fear, I guess, run my life. The second thing I learned was confidence, being able to speak in front of, you know, an audience. Yes, I, as a teacher, I speak in front of children, but being able to speak in front of, you know, a panel of judges, an audience, be asked tough questions and hold myself in a way that was graceful and confident and empowering as well. And walking on stage in a bikini was probably the most uncomfortable that I have ever been.
Yeah.
But I did it. And that's something that I'm proud to say that I did. Because it's not something that I ever thought I would do or could do.
Yeah.
And even just doing that, I just got over my fear and I did it and it was great. And I felt empowered. And, you know, I just look back at that and think, wow, I wouldn't have recognized myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did it. And so, you know, some people might think, wow, okay. But how many people would do that? Not many, I don't think.
No, not a lot.
So, yeah, I think confidence and empowerment and just being able to answer difficult questions.
Yeah, what were the sort of difficult questions asked?
So one of the questions was on stage. So top five, we each got a question. And one of the questions that I got was, you know, my opinion on why beauty pageants had been banned from national television. And do I think that they should come back to national television? And so, you know, I discussed how, again, the perception of beauty pageants have shaped how society view them. And, you know, someone else had a question about all the questions actually were to do with feminism and how beauty pageants are breaking the stereotypes of that.
Yeah, have you read The Beauty Myth?
I haven't, no. Have you?
No, but I've been reading a few other feminism books and looked into some of the summaries from that one, and it's on my list of ones to read.
What have you learned, Sam?
Well, there's so much stuff in feminism in general in terms of like how biased we are.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like the beauty side of things, it's like, I guess women grow up with this feeling that they need to be beautiful and stuff to be like, make it in the world, whereas men, you know, more like need to run businesses or be intelligent or something. It's, so, but to women to be beautiful, that's only because they can then go and please men. It's like, so that's kind of disempowering if you kind of already, the thing you're looking for is that. And like, why is the cosmetics industry so huge if it's just for women? So it's like, not to say that you have bad ideas in your head, but you're saying that you, like, as an influencer, you're very interested in like beauty and all these things. And it's like, why are these things even in your head if actually that doesn't even matter, because that's not getting you to where you should be kind of thing. And you're like, you're just a product of like your environment.
It's true, actually. It's like, I did see this debate. It's actually on YouTube, but I think it was on ITV this morning, or it was one of the programs, and it was two women, and one of them was advocate for wearing makeup and how she felt more empowered by makeup.
Yeah.
And the other lady wore no makeup, and she made some very good points. She said, why should I wear makeup to be taken seriously? Why do I need to do anything that men don't need to do in order to feel, you know, powerful and to be taken seriously? And the other lady, you know, she said, well, you just look more put together, you look like you've made an effort, but why is it one rule for women and another rule for men? You know, and so I found that really, really interesting. And I mean, especially growing up, I grew up in Venezuela, which is, I mean, Venezuela's many things, it's one of the most dangerous countries. I actually grew up in Caracas, which is one of the most dangerous cities in the world, and Venezuela is also one of the countries that leads in pageantry and in beauty and aesthetics. And so I grew up with a lot of women in my family who couldn't afford food a lot of the time, but they could afford a moisturizer, and they could, you know, they couldn't afford to do certain things, but they could afford makeup. And so I guess culturally, especially in the UK, we've kind of grown out of those stereotypes, but many countries now, women sadly use beauty as a way to feel empowered, and especially countries where their education, it's not the best, they're not exposed to the education that, let's say, we have here in the UK. And what do they turn to? Their looks, their beauty,
to get ahead,
I suppose.
If you're not going to have the option of getting a good job or have any support on like welfare and stuff when you have like a child or anything, and you need to rely on
something,
a man, like you can look pretty, then that's useful. But so it's not like telling people that they're bad for wearing makeup or something, but it's sort of like pointing out that like it's annoying, it's a thing that exists, it has to happen. It's confusing. And then again, in terms of like, it's quite interesting in like boardrooms and stuff, the amount of times women get interrupted compared to men. And then like, if a woman interrupts a man, she comes across as like bitchy, whereas if a man interrupts a woman, he just seems assertive, and you're like, that's fucked
why
up
is that?
Like, women should be like
that
it's totally
true.
nuts.
That is It's just these perceptions. Again, it's how we've grown up.
Yeah.
It's intergenerational stereotypes.
Yeah, it's not like it's only men that make it happen. And like women, as in you think the same things,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? As in
yeah.
kind of thing. It's just that's how like society is currently and shouldn't be.
But it is changing. And, you know, when you think back, it wasn't that long ago, 100 years ago. Yeah, it's not long ago, is it? A few generations back. So I think that we are making a lot of progress on that.
Yeah, I guess it's just sort of
and having more reassessing
where we are, because there's been like different waves of like, okay, women get the vote, women should have jobs and these things, and then be like, wait, we're still kind of putting women down even though we've done all these things, and kind of just realizing how many levels there were to the game.
Exactly.
It's kind of like when you climb those hills and then you think you're getting to the end and then like, there's more.
There's another one, yeah. There's a big old hill.
We'll do this and the feminism will be over. Like, oh shit, there's so many more things we haven't done yet. Like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, great. It's great you've been reading up on that.
Yeah, this is one of the things. And you see lots of lists of being like the best feminism books for women to read. And you're like, well, half for the women other to world read. Needs to read as well, because otherwise...
otherwise nothing's going to change, right?
Yeah, yeah. You just come across as like a bitchy feminist that has problems. It's like, guys need to read this thing. Cool. Anyway, any other major topics that we should talk about?
What have we covered? We've covered beauty pageants, feminism, growth mindset.
Well, Tony Robbins. What happened there besides your fire story?
Date with Destiny. Seven days. Well worth it. So I flew all the way out to Palm Beach, go to his Date with Destiny. Something that I had been wanting to do, actually, and very glad that I did. One of the things that we did throughout the 7 days was really delve into our past and why we are the way that we are, okay? And asking questions such as, what are our values? And every day we're ruled by our values. And so many of us don't know what our values are. And so one of my values at the top of my list was passion. But what I didn't realize was that actually, you know, having so much passion, and although it seems like a very good thing, it can also lead you to make poor choices. For passion, you know, because you're so passionate, you don't want anything to get in the way, it can lead to poor decisions.
Yeah.
And so one of my top values now is courage, and just, you know, waking up every day, how am I going to be courageous today? And how am I going to be intelligent today? Even though it's something that we have, and I think I'm an intelligent person, I need to remind myself, okay, how am I going to make smart choices today? And so really figuring out what my values are, and the six human needs, which I don't know if you heard of this, Sam, the six human needs.
I feel like I've heard about it before, but you can remind me.
What happens when we do feel unhappy or unfulfilled? Usually it's because we're not meeting one of our six human needs. Okay, so let me try and remember these now. So certainty, we all have a need for certainty, you know, knowing that we're going to wake up and be able to go to our job that day and, you know, have an income, that kind of thing, you know. But we also have a need for uncertainty, because if everything was predictable, it would be boring, right? So we have a need for adventure and variety. So we also have a need for significance. Okay, so being respected and feeling worthy of love, or worthy, you know, in our jobs. Our fourth need is love and connection. So we all have a desire to be loved and love and be connected. And it doesn't have to always be a romantic connection. It can be, you know, connected with our parents, with our friends. And then we have the final two needs, which are more spiritual. So growth and contribution. And so growth, wanting to learn every day, wanting to get better, improve. And then the sixth one, contribution, having a wider impact beyond ourselves, serving others, helping others. And so when those needs are not being met, that's when we find that we, you know, oh, we have a good job, we have a stable income, why am I not happy? What's wrong? If everything else seems right, it's usually because one of those needs isn't being met. And so a lot of the times we're not aware of why we feel the way that we do. But if you know that, you know, and we all have needs that are different, by the way. So my top need is growth and contribution. And that can change. That could change next year. That could change tomorrow. But right now, growth and contribution are my top two needs. And so we all have different needs at different times. But if they're not being met, then it can cause depression, mental health issues, and so on. And so, again, just being aware, what are your needs and what are you doing every day to get you to meet those needs? So those were the main two things that I discovered about myself over the course of the 7 days. So, yeah. Every day is a new day, reset, remind myself, what are my values, what are my needs, and what am I doing today to get me to where I want to be.
Cool. Have you ever tried the 6-minute journal?
Or 5-minute journal. 5-minute journal. I think I've got one there actually. Yeah. And so you write down every day, you know, every morning you write down
what you're grateful for. Yeah. Purpose that day. But
No,
you can
make
it your own thing. You can say, what am I going to do to be courageous today? Or what did I do that was
Yeah. So in my 5 minutes in the morning, you know, I just think to myself, okay, what am I going to do today? What did I do yesterday? What did I not do yesterday?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think just making that decision that I'm going to be those things encourages me to try and be those things, even if I don't have a good day. Okay, well, there's tomorrow. And so, yeah, I just think so much of my early 20s, I didn't know who I was, didn't know what my values were. I was kind of drifting through, feeling, you know, everything seemed okay on the surface. I had my teaching job, I had my relationship, I had my friends, my family.
Yeah.
Why was I feeling so unsatisfied? And it was because I didn't have growth or contribution. I wasn't, you know, aware that I could even do so much self-discovery and that I could have such an impact on especially younger people.
Yeah, it really sounds like you found like a much more meaningful thing to be doing and enjoying it a lot. It's funny, like I've been reading Elephant in the Brain and there's quite a lot of good books, but concept that you're very good at explaining things to yourself. Mm-hmm. So even though you don't really know what you're doing, any given moment you can kind of explain why you're doing something and think that you're doing it for like the right reason or whatever. But you can kind of spend a decade actually having no clue what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
But constantly being like, if any point like I met you, we were friends.
Yeah.
You seemed like a well together person.
Yeah.
I did as well. Yeah. Like, you know, so you don't come across like that because evolutionary, you have to kind of say that you're a normal person. So like society accepts you kind of thing. And and so you just carry on doing your basic functions kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't really sit and really question at a deeper level, like what is the true purpose and meaning of your actions?
Exactly.
And it's really worth sitting down and like getting to know yourself.
Absolutely. Because I think everyone listening to this, everyone should just stop and just to ask the questions, why am I feeling this way? What am I need? What isn't being met? What do I need to change? Your life right now is an accumulation of all those decisions that you've made and nothing is by chance. And yeah, you can change your life around if you change all those little decisions that you do make every day.
Cool. So what do you think going forwards is going to be happening then in 5 years' time?
5 years from now, gosh. Well, 5 years from now, I hope to still be growing as a person and having impact beyond myself. I hope that in 5 years from now, I will have hopefully impacted lots of teenagers, their parents, their families, that they'll just be able to be happier growing up. And if that's what my life is looking like in 5 years, I'll be very, very fulfilled.
Yeah, it's really annoying. Like I was mentoring on the Bristol University. I joined their mentor scheme to mentor some students and people from different backgrounds and stuff to help them. And they gave me this student who I had really fun like mentoring him, but he wanted to get a job with Deloitte or something and didn't get his first job and he's trying to get into consulting and like obviously I wasn't. I've never worked in those kind of things. So giving him interview tips, I couldn't really help him with it. Yeah. I was talking like more meta life stuff, like what is going to make you happy? What's the point of everything? And like asking these questions. And they fired me as a mentor because they're like, just tell them how to get an interview with fucking like
just
a different consultant.
It's
like, what? I'm not going to just like...
Wow. See, this is it because I think so many people think that that will make them happy, you know, getting a job at Deloitte or wherever they are, you know, having this income or, you know, and then actually what happens in 5-10 years? Why is it that they've got the job, they've got the life, the family, the income, but they're still not happy?
Yeah.
So
not all the right way to do things.
No.
As in like Grant Cardone is definitely all on the sort of side of like, it's all about the end result and not about the journey. But basically, I'm pretty sure it's mostly about the journey.
It should be about the journey,
It's a bit of both. And you've got to know where you're going and enjoy what the destination is. But you've got to enjoy the entire way you're getting there
well. Absolutely. If you're not enjoying the journey to get to your goal, you know, you'll reach your goal and you'll be happy for 3 hours, 3 weeks, maybe three months. And then what? Okay. Set a new goal, but you have to enjoy the journey, otherwise what's the point really? And I think you do most of your growth and your learning on the way there, and actually 100%. Reaching the goal is just a bonus, but actually what you learn along the way shapes you and makes you who you are. And there were so many times, even when I was just doing my master's last year, where I thought, oh, I can't do this, and just doing it and learning and going through all those obstacles, and I did it, and it was great that I did it and I felt great for, you know, a week or two, but actually it was all that growth and all those obstacles that I overcame along the way that I was most proud of.
Definitely it's actual doing it, which is why I guess I've been talking a lot about like books. It sounds like I'm going off on a tangent, But you finish a book and like the journey is to complete the book.
Yeah.
But then like you miss the best parts of the journey because you're like, well, as in the destination is finishing the book. But like the journey, you can make it as in like when you take exams or something, you know, you study the material, you talk about it, you digest it, you write questions and answers about it and you get to know it.
Yeah.
Which if you're reading a book, your actual destination is to become smarter in the thing the book's about.
Hmm.
If you read it once, like you don't talk about it, you kind of forget about it. You just know that it was a good book. That's about it. You basically rated a book, which you spent a long time just reading it. But if you like properly study it and talk about it with other people and ask difficult questions and stop yourself and be like, okay, what have I learned? What can I make? What are the actions I can take? What can I change? That's the journey that you want to get you to the real destination that you really wanted from reading the book. The destination seems like it's just finishing the book, but the real destination is like, how do I make myself happier by reading this book?
That's such a great analogy. It's not just, oh, I've got to the last page. Yeah. I've read the last sentence, boom, done. It's, oh, what did that book, you know, what did I learn from it? And why did I read the book in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. So
that's a great analogy. I think it goes with exams as well. Okay. Mm. You know, the end goal for a lot of parents and kids to get the grade, but what's the point in the grade if you know, what did you learn? Okay.
Yeah.
And did you enjoy those 7 years of secondary school, or did you just, you know, drift along and then?
Yeah, it depends on what it is you're studying, but most results in these things kind of, it's just virtue signaling. So like 90% of your degree is just to show that you could get a degree. It's not the actual content that you learned.
Yeah, it's to show that you can
get a degree
get a degree.
So you may as well do something that really interests you.
Exactly.
Even because you probably won't actually end up doing it. Or if you do, you want it to be something that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, just doing a degree in like something that isn't your big passion.
Well, yeah, like with my master's, I had to do so much research. And okay, yes, it was to show that I could do a research paper and that I could be a researcher. But actually, I researched a topic that I really enjoyed, and it was private tuition, and it was to do with habitus and mindset and amongst elite families. And I found that really fascinating. Mm. And so, yes, I showed that I can be a researcher and that I can research, but I learned so much along the way.
Yeah, it sounds like something that was super fascinating. It was sort of like, you probably would have been doing that anyway kind of thing, but you happened to be able to put a degree on it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's there now, and that's it. Yeah. So true.
Yeah, I have been thinking of maybe like doing a PhD on something that like, I've just been following my interests so much.
It's something interesting, and that you would do anyway. Why not just, you know, get a PhD and stick that on the end of it, as you say.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll see. Cool. Are there any questions you want to ask me?
Ooh. Sammy, what are your projects at the moment? I want to hear about the talk you're going to do next month and how you're inspiring others. What gives you your purpose, Sam, and what are your needs?
Like you said, the growth and contribution are definitely my big ones. Yeah. And doing the podcast, I'm talking to so many people. It's just such a fun chance to learn stuff and to be able to contribute at the same time, like what I'm learning, but other people can learn from it. It's nice. So I've started another podcast on the subject of books, which is about me and my friend just read a book every week. And then we explain the book and what you can learn from it. And so we're learning a lot more from these books that we read because we read it with someone else and have a conversation about it. And you can learn stuff as well by having it. So yeah, which is nice.
Fantastic.
And I'm kind of building an app that relates to books as well and podcasts. So basically, because I've been so annoyed by listening to books and podcasts by myself.
Yeah.
It seems like you could talk to someone about it if you listen to the same one, but it's really hard to like sync up and make sure that you actually listen to the same thing together.
Yeah.
But if you have it like built into the app that is just a social app. So like if we were friends on the app, I could say, yeah, me and Maria, we're both really interested in mindset stuff. We can try and listen to two podcasts a week about mindsets, or maybe one of both listen to the same book together. We'll both listen to that same podcast like on the same day. Like maybe it's different timings. I go to the gym at different time as you, but like we'll be in sync in general. Yeah. So if we meet up next weekend, we have both read the same chapter of a book or something. And so we can actually talk about what we've learned and actually like at a fine grained level, do something together, even though you're kind of alone the whole time you're listening to stuff.
Yeah,
but it just means that you actually have a friend there that you can talk to stuff about and learn more
from what you're doing. I'm listening to a couple of podcasts at the moment, but I do feel like it's a very lonely experience. I've got no one else to talk to. And I've recommended the podcast, or I'll say, oh, you know, you should listen to this.
But it doesn't go straight to the top of someone's playlist.
No.
It, like, and they actually go and get it, but like a month later they'll have listened to it and you've forgotten what it was.
And it's kind of a very lonely experience, which, and when you are listening to something so inspiring, you want to talk about it. And so I think that's a great idea. When will that be launched?
I'm trying to work out the strategy as in whether I just build it myself, or I was thinking maybe I just raise some money and then get someone else to build it, because I quite like doing lots of other stuff. And I mean, if I just kind of shut myself away for 2 months, I could do it, but then I wouldn't be able to do anything else at the same time. And I'm trying to do everything all at once. I know it'll just like 2 months will turn into like 2 years kind of thing, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did it by myself. So I figured if I raised some money, it's forcing function to make it the main priority, and I can kind of just outsource.
Well, I mean, it could be done in a couple of months. You know,
exactly. So that's like quite exciting me at the moment.
Yeah, then, that's awesome.
Yeah, my stand-up comedy is taking up time.
So you're doing a course, aren't you, for it?
Yeah, yeah. So getting to that after this.
Wow. Which is fun. Embracing your fears.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely something like a few years ago, I'd have been like, oh my God.
No way. Yeah.
And now I'm like, yeah, I guess I should try it. That's like a good thing
to do. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Growth, see growth and contribution. There we go.
Exactly.
So that's awesome, Sam. Well, good luck with that. And I look forward to keeping up to date with all of your exciting ventures. Yeah,
thanks. So, I had two last questions.
Yeah, go for
one. What is your earliest memory?
Oh, wow. My earliest memory.
Which is a quite early memory that's distinct.
Okay, my earliest memory is actually my first day of nursery. I was probably about 3 or 4. And I was in Venezuela, and I remember drawing a picture for my teacher, and it was my dad. And I hadn't quite drawn my dad on the grass. I was drawing a picture of my dad on the grass, and I said, oh, my dad's in the sky. I said to the teacher, oh, my dad's in the sky. My mum came to pick me up, and the teacher said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear about your husband. You know, because I'd said he was like in the sky. She thought, you know, something had happened to him. So that was my earliest memory.
That's funny. Weird. Yeah. You learn that people misinterpret things if you're not very clear.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because in Spanish, cielo can mean heaven and sky. And so, you know, I was pointing at this bitch, like, oh, look, my dad's in the sky. And the teacher was horrified. She thought, oh, no, something happened.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Hadn't thought about that in years, Sam.
Yeah, my pleasure. What is the kindest thing that someone has done for you?
Oh, wow. The kindest thing that someone has done for me. You know what? The first thought that came to my mind was actually my parents and just giving me the freedom to let me be who I am. And I think that I can't really pinpoint one time, but I think just being so supportive.
What do they think about you coming to London and studying here?
They were
You'd already been here anyway, hadn't you?
Yeah, so I was studying in Surrey, Royal Holloway.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, after I graduated and I wanted to be a teacher and I wanted to, you know, even just all these things that I've been doing, you know, they've just been so, so supportive. Never once tried to impose their beliefs on me, which is something that they did do before, and then they just stopped. And I think that was the kindest thing they could have done, was actually to just realize she is her own person.
Yeah.
Let's just let her be.
Do you think that was partly because they saw how you were reacting? Because I'm pretty sure my parents know that if they try and push me to things, it's just never going to happen.
Yeah,
I think so.
But I was very subservient as a kid. You know, I just did what they told me to do. I was not rebellious at all. And then one day I just, I pushed back. And then they stopped. They realized, okay, let's let her be and let's support her along the way. So
cool. Well, thanks so much for the interview and hosting me here in your lovely partner's flat.
Oh, well, no worries. Thank you so much, Sam. And I look forward to hearing this back and to hearing your next episode. So thank you for having me.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learnt by contacting us through the website growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.